in there so that we can support our husband as God has created us to. And I love Philippians 3:13 says, forgetting what lies behind and reaching forward to what lies ahead. Because we all make mistakes in our relationship with our husbands. And if we can just accept ourselves where we are right now and say, okay, so I blew it yesterday, I goofed this morning, but I can press on from where I am right now and strive to be the wife that God created me to be. I'm going to give just an outline on the overhead, so I'll be turning it on just to let you see where I'm going and turning it off, okay? We are capable of meeting our husband's needs. That was a shock to me when I realized that God created me in such a fashion that I was capable of meeting his needs. He created him with needs that I could meet. Proverbs 16:33 says, the lot is cast into the lap, but the decision is wholly of the Lord. Even the events that seem accidental are really ordered by him. So I don't think it's an accident that I was created the way I am with my set of strengths and weaknesses, my temperament, my personality, and that Lewis was created with his set of weaknesses, strengths, and his personality. And that the two can work together for the good of the kingdom. Therefore, he has needs that God created me to meet. I love Tim LaHaye's books, Spirit Controlled Temperament, Transformed Temperaments. Those, I have a handout list to give you, and you'll have some books on there that are not specifically concerning a husband and wife or supporting a husband, but I feel that they have helped me more in my marriage than some of the books that are out especially for marriage. And because they told me what strengths and weaknesses that my husband had, and that he had them because he was created that way. And I used to look at him and I used to say, well, why does he act like that? I still say that. But I began to, one characteristic that he had, and in the beginning of our marriage it wiped me out, and he would be depressed. And I would come into the house and he would be, you know, like this, and I couldn't understand why. And immediately I took it personally. Okay, what have I done? You know, and so I asked him, what have I done? Nothing. Okay, so I've done nothing. That means I've got to play the game of trying to figure out what I've done. And so I go through this process. And we were not communicating, therefore I never found out what I did, and therefore it would go deep-seated. And I would think, I keep on doing all these things that he doesn't like, but he doesn't communicate with me. He doesn't share with me. And then after I read Tim LaHaye's books and started studying our temperaments and started studying our weaknesses and our strengths, then, it was so exciting to know he could be depressed and I wouldn't even be involved in it. You know, and I'd say, okay, why don't you tell me what's going through your mind? And so he'd start telling me the things going through his mind. And I'd say, why don't we just write it down on a piece of paper? And it would be different things. Usually a melancholic, if they're depressed, it's hard for them to tell you this one thing is bothering me. And I couldn't understand that because I always knew what was bothering me. And so for him to write these things down, his thoughts would go through his mind. I started identifying with him, and I started understanding him. And so I'd take his list, and instead of holding it against him, I'd start taking his list and just start praying that list for him. And, that was just beautiful. So study your husband, because he was created in a way that you were created to meet needs he has. Along with that, you need to study yourself. Because there are times when something Lewis may say may affect me one way, and the next day the same statement would affect me another way. So I needed to also study myself to be able to respond to him correctly, to be able to lift him up. And the fact that we are created by God to be a support to our husbands, it's found in 1 Corinthians 11:9. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. That was a revelation to me. When I read that verse, it was right when we started in Bible study, and up to that point, I had been a loser as a wife. Totally. I had wanted everything to go my way, and in my mind, I said we had a 50-50 marriage. You know, he would give 50 and I would give 50. And really, that's what I thought we had. But if he didn't give my way all the time, I responded so violently that, well, he'd rather give in than to fight. So, in essence, I had 100% and he had just a little bit. When I read the verse, 1 Corinthians 11:9, and God said, Cahill, you're not created so that Lewis Hill can meet every need of yours. I know you think that because in our society, the door is open for you, and we are taught that from the day we're born, that, you know, there's some prince out there waiting for you. And we are taught that, and through our stories and our movies, our TV and whatever, we have the idea that we are something for somebody else. And when God showed me 1 Corinthians 11:9, it really shook me up. I had to reevaluate all my thinking process. So if we are created, then we must need to support our husbands in different ways. And the first way is physically. And I'm going quickly through a few of these steps because God has laid on my heart a couple of areas to really go into depth with. So I'll just mention some of these, and I'm sure many of you have a lot that you can add in these areas, and I encourage you to study. If I mention an area, for instance, the first one on nutrition, 3 John 2 says, Beloved, I pray that in all respects you may prosper and be in good health, just as your souls prosper. So we do have responsibility in the area of nutrition in our husbands' lives. And the government survey came out recently and reported the rich and the poor in America are in deficiency in vitamins and nutrients. And I have some of those lists if you'd like to see the particular ones. But I encourage you, just for your own family, to study and find out what your particular family is deficient in. There are a lot of people that are a lot more qualified than I am in that area. But just an exhortation to know that you're responsible for the nutrition of your family, and that 3 John tells us that, you know, we should be in good health as well as our souls being in good health. And then the area of weight. Proverbs 23:20-21 and Luke 21:34. They speak of self-indulgence, of gluttony. And this is a sin that we have in the United States. And we as wives who are responsible for the food that's brought into the homes can take control in this area. It's self-discipline and it's hard, but we can change some of the things that we have available so freely and change cakes and cookies and sweets and to nuts and fruits and things that are a lot better for us. And the reason I mention the weight, the main reason I mention the weight, is because of what it does to our stamina, to our energy. And if we are not as qualified as we can possibly be on a daily basis to put forth all the energy that we have toward the kingdom, getting to know Christ and getting Christ out to others, then we don't have as much time, like Pat was talking about in her workshop, as other people do. You know, if you don't have all the energy that you could possibly have on a 24-hour basis, and someone else is using their total potential of energy, then you can't accomplish as much. So weight is important with our husbands in that aspect. And then the third area, which I really hate. Oh, I hate it. And it's the area of exercise. And I made a statement about 2 years ago that nobody would find me jogging. That wasn't for me. I didn't like to sweat. I didn't like to have my hair messed up. I just didn't like to run. I mean, it's just not for me. So I read Aerobics for Women, and I thought, well, maybe my energy level would be better. And so last November, I started doing the aerobics in the house. You know, it's comfortable, and you can wear what you want. And I jumped rope, and I climbed stairs, and my energy level didn't change. Now, I'm not saying that won't work. I'm just saying for me, it didn't work. So I visited several people and found out that they were jogging. And it seems that so many of the people that I admired and respected had started jogging because it increased their energy level and it helped with their weight problem. And I thought, oh, God, please don't be telling me to jog. You know, I just don't like it and I don't want to do it. Well, I started and I realized that it was very good for your health. It was very good for your energy level. And I could accomplish more in a day's time than I could without doing it. Well, the thing that was exciting to me is that it helped my husband to be consistent in exercise. And what's more important is that I support him in the physical. And if I'm an encouragement to him in the physical, then don't you know that makes me feel that I'm really doing my job for the Heart Association and all these things that are pushing the exercise. In the area of exercise, one thing I've heard girls complain about, their husbands playing racquetball, the time that it takes for them to play racquetball or any of the handball sports, and the time it takes for them to jog. And if we start complaining about the time that they're taking away from us, or the time they're taking away from the children, or that they should be meeting with somebody instead of out doing that exercise, then, you know, that just destroys their desire to do that. So we can be a real motivation for them in encouraging them in their program. And then in the area of sleep, you're all aware of how much we need the rest. But one thing I've learned recently is that if you do not have adequate sleep, you cannot think objectively. And so that's just to study ourselves. If you find you need a certain amount of sleep and you're not getting it, and then you find that you're not responding correctly to your husband, well, check out and see if you are actually getting enough rest. And then an area that's just a personal area that I have to die to myself in, and that's I'm a late night person. I love to stay up to 3 o'clock. I could, you know, everybody goes to bed and I can run through the house and take care of all the little things I want to do, and then I can stay up and read without the telephone and the doorbell and Lewis's needs and my kids' needs and so forth. And that's wonderful for me. There's only one problem. My husband wants me to go to bed with him at 10 o'clock. So if your husband wants you to go to bed with him, then that's what you should do. We are to support our husbands. And then the fifth area in the physical is in the area of sex. And these other areas I've brought out have mentioned that they will help us to have more energy. And if we have more energy, then we can do more for the kingdom. Well, also in the area of sex, abstinence from sex can cause frustration, which drains stamina. And if we are not conscientious in our efforts in the physical relationship with our husband, then we can drain part of their potential and energy. Now, I would really like to share a little bit more about this area. And I do it not because I want to, because from the day I knew I was a girl, I have been intimidated by the fact that I was a girl. But this is an area that when we first came around the Navigators and started in Bible study, you wouldn't believe it, but in the book studies, it didn't matter, in chapter analysis, on TV, from messages, from sermons, conferences, workshops, it seemed that God started bombarding me with information about telling me where I was in my physical relationship with my husband. You see, I grew up with the idea that sex was something that was a duty, it was a chore, and it was evil. Now, my mother did not intend to do this to me. And if she was sitting here today, she would not believe that I was her daughter saying this. But it was simply because the comments that she would make as I was growing up, we would see a girl on the street, and you know, it was the negative remarks that she would make about the way she was dressed. So sex was always evil in my mind. And I was always told verbally that once you were married, it was fine. But that didn't erase all that other stuff that I had. So when we married, that marriage license didn't do a thing for between the ears up here. And so I had all these problems. After our second child was born, it was months before we had relations. And that was my desire. And I went to a doctor and I asked him to help me because I knew something was wrong. And I was perfectly happy. But I knew that that couldn't go on forever. So he gave me hormone shots and talked to me. And he says, there's nothing wrong with you, but we'll try some hormone shots. And they didn't do anything because the power up here was far greater than the power going in my bloodstream. And it only took God's word to help me in that area. 1 Corinthians 7 says that the wife does not have authority over her body, but the husband does, and stop depriving one another. And then coupled with the verse I've already given you, 1 Corinthians 11:9, man was not created for the woman's sake, but woman for the man's sake. Well, for me personally, that said, Kay, you've got to quit thinking about yourself. And you've got to start finding out something about men. Find out about them. God created this whole process of the physical relationship. Therefore, if you really want to grow, you're going to have to find out what He says about it. The first thing that excited me was the fact that God did create sex. And I saw that that was His plan. It was His plan before man sinned. And so that started working on me. But I think the main thing that helped me in that particular area was the fact that Philippians 2, 3, and 4 says, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. So I had to die to myself and start thinking about my husband's needs. That meant that I had to find out what he liked. I had to respond to him like he wanted me to respond to him. And I had to find out the differences between men and women. One difference I found was that men seek sex to relieve frustrations, and it comforts them. Women may be tired and not desire sex at all after a hard day, but not so with men. And you know what I found was that for me to support Lewis physically, when I knew he was frustrated, when I knew he was uptight, when I knew that he was going through something heavy, for me to be the aggressor, well, I could relieve frustrations like crazy. And I didn't know I had that power. But the reason was for that one statement. You know, that would calm a man. Whereas if I'm frustrated and uptight, tired, I mean, that is the last thing that I want to involve myself in. But there is that difference. just in the way men and women are created. You know, isn't it neat that just about everything in the Christian life is a matter of dying to self? You die to yourself, and what do you have? Abundant life. And I found that every time that I did that, and I just thought through, you're really frustrated. You're really tired. That was a heavy business deal that you went through today, or you've had some long hours. Then for me to make that an application, just because I love him and I want to support him physically. And then another area was, I found out that men are stimulated by sight and that women are stimulated by touch. Well, I knew that. I didn't apply it at one time because I knew I used to dress in the bathroom with my nightgowns up here and here and down here. And I used to do that because I knew, you know, that men were stimulated by sight. But I didn't realize the degree of that. Now, the world has realized that, and Satan has done a beautiful job in the world. And it's hard for our husbands to just walk through a campus or downstairs, an apartment store, in a grocery store. It's hard for them to walk through there, much harder than for us. We look and we think, oh, and we're going about a business. But not so. So we need to be in constant prayer for them in the area of lust. And then we need to think through, well, now, if that is stimulating to our husbands just in the world, then it's not bad that God created that way, men that way. Then we can stimulate our own husbands with what we wear. Now, I'm not talking about in public, but I'm talking about in the bedroom. Look around and find out what stimulates on the outside. It's not bad that we take that and use it with our own husbands. But I've used a lot of outfits in our bedroom that, you know, would shock my mother. But they didn't cost anything. Just things we have around the house. So now, if you want any ideas on that, I'll be glad to share personally with you. But men are different. What my husband likes, your husband might not like. But you can have fun trying to figure out what he does like. You know, if you go to a department store, in fact, there was a bridal shower that was given for a missionary couple coming home. And it was so cute. The husband said, we think that's an excellent idea because they've been gone for 4 years, and I'm sure that it was a lingerie shower. I said bridal shower. I meant lingerie shower. And it would be nice to give her a lot of nice things since she's probably been with Adam for a number of years. The husbands got together and said, we agree, but let the husbands pick them out. And what they picked out, we would never have picked out. Women want everything to be rosy before sex. Men want sex, so everything will be rosy. Another way to say that is a woman wants to make up before she makes love. A man wants to make love in order to make up. Have you ever been in a conflict situation with your husband and you were in disagreement over a decision? And then, you know, you had not had time. People had come in and the children and so forth. And you had just not had that amount of time that you could talk through this thing and settle it. Or you had been stewing during the day because there had been this list of things that you shared with him that were frustrating you. And he had not taken the initiative to do anything about it. And so you, during the day, had been thinking about these things, and you thought, now I'm going to really talk to him about that when he comes in because I'm angry. And he comes in and something happens and you can't talk about it, and then you get in bed and here comes... See, he knows that things are not rosy. He knows there's something wrong, And he wants to know everything is okay so that he can rest. But what you're thinking is, now why would he want a physical relationship when I want to talk? So what I've learned is that I can die to myself and I can meet that physical need, and then we talk. Maybe not that night, but it makes that communication so much easier. Now, I've had to play some games with myself to do this. So what I've done is I've gotten some pictures in my mind. Some of them are some of the pictures I have, memories of when we first met. And we were in high school and in a band. And I was down in the front row and he was up on the back. And I used to turn around and he would give me this big grin. And that used to just thrill me. I used to, you know, I'd be playing along and I'd just turn around just for that grin. Well, that's a memory. That is a romantic memory for me. And so I just keep that, not in the subconscious, but in the conscious, so that I can think about that to replace this bitterness and this conflict situation that has me uptight. Now, you all have it. And in Revelations, you know, that's what the church had left. They had left their first love. And so whatever drew you to your husband that gives you fond memories, let that be a memory that you can draw upon when you're trying to transform that mind, that thought pattern, to something that would make you feel warm toward your husband. Now, I have added other memories. There are special times when I've been down and he sensed it and he would do something special, like a plant or a special gift of some kind. But you have your own, because we're all different. But whatever special thing that draws you to your husband, then capitalize on that and remember that when you're trying to die to yourself and meet a need of his. That's Philippians 4:8. If anything be worthy of praise, let your mind dwell on these things. And research has proven that the two areas that cause divorce are the physical relationship and finances. Those are the two top ones that cause divorce in America. I believe Satan has gotten involved in this to wipe out the Christians. God ordained sex. Satan is against anything God ordained. Nothing will create dissension more in a relationship than conflict in the physical. 1 Peter 3:7 says our prayers will be hindered if there's conflict, if there's dissension between husband and wife. And Ephesians 5:21 through 31 tells us that a Christian husband and wife relationship can be to the world an example of the relationship of Christ to the church. So you see how vital that one thing can get in and destroy our prayer life, can destroy our Christian witness to our neighbors. Now, I do have a bibliography to hand out to you that has a list of books on it, and one on there that I would put 10 stars by is a new one by Joseph Dillo on Solomon on Sex. If you haven't read it, I really encourage you to read it. Now, if you have a fantastic sex life, don't bother about it. But if you think there can be some improvement in your sex life, a lot of it is just mental thoughts. But he does a beautiful job of showing what God says in Solomon. Solomon on Sex by Joseph Dillo. There are some other books recommended on that sheet that if you're interested in that particular area or think that you could use some improvement. I also have a handout sheet to give to you that lists several things, and there are things like a tidy home, a neat appearance, daily walk, ministry. It's just a list that I would give to you and ask that you take home and ask your husband to put in order the way he would like to see those things in your life. and then ask Him to put in order the way He sees them in your life. And one of those things on there is a warm sexual response. And so if you are not communicating in that area, if you're not communicating, this would be a good tool to start communicating on a lot of different areas, like on the children. So just ask Him to put that in order and then talk about it and see what you need to do about it. Now the other area in the physical is harm to his body. Now we don't need to support that. I think we do that without any support. Proverbs is full of information telling us what we literally do to our husband's body. We damage our husband's bodies. We nag, we quarrel, and we find fault. And God tells us that it would be better if our husbands lived in the desert with all of the elements of weather pounding on his body physically, that physically he would be better off than he is physically living with us. Now, Proverbs 21:9 says, it is better to dwell on the corner of the housetop on the flat oriental roof than in a house shared with a nagging, quarrelsome, fault-finding woman. You know, on a flat, open housetop. Live there. And if you were in Colorado Springs when it held, you know that it could be damaging. So there is stress to the body. There is physical stress, there is chemical stress, and there is emotional stress to a man's body. And we're talking about what we do emotionally, that emotional stress to his body that causes physical damage. And Bill, the other day, did you hear that remark he said about after the third criticism? What does a person feel? Right. Defeated, a failure. So if you've criticized your husband on more than three things, then you've helped your husband to feel a failure. Now, on the handout sheet, you'll find many verses that show what the Proverbs tell us happened to the body. Rottenness to the bones makes a heart sick. But desire fulfilled is a tree of life. If we can fulfill their desires, it's like a tree of life. So we can do the very opposite too. We can so encourage and lift them up that they can handle anything. And I remember a man standing up one time and saying in front of a group of people that he was not afraid to try anything he wanted to try because he knew that in the sight of his wife, he would be a success. And I sat there and I knew I couldn't say that. I knew Lewis couldn't say that. And that really hurt. She has learned to put into practice these things to encourage him. There are two books that are on the reading list, None of These Diseases and How to Live 365 Days a Year. How to Live 365 Days a Year by Schindler. That's not a new book, but it's new to me. I just read it this past year, and I could not believe what it was saying. It tells you what happens on the inside of the body physically when you have the bad emotions. The anger, the jealousy, the frustrations. And see, we can do that to our husbands. We can cause him to be frustrated and angry because of our nitpicking. And he tells you in this book what literally happens inside the body. Does anything that someone does around you bother you that's a constant irritation, like maybe chewing gum or, the water dripping? Or if I just stood here and did this the whole time we were talking, do you think it would bother you? Would you like for me to stop? Proverbs 27:15 says, "A continual dripping on a day of violent showers and a contentious woman are alike." So we can really damage our body, our husband's bodies, just by the way we live with them on a daily basis. Now this is very much under the same idea of emotions. We need to support them mentally and emotionally. So the opposite of nagging is accepting. Ephesians 5:22 says to adapt to our husbands as a service to the Lord. We know that our husbands don't deserve it. You know, they're just as sinful as we are. They don't deserve it, but God does, and we want to obey God. And God says to adapt to our husbands as a service to Him. So we can cause an emotional basket case by not accepting them just like they are. You accept himself. Does your husband have some habits that irritate you? Are there particular manners at the table that irritate you? Or the way he drives the car? Or the way he parks the car? The way he leaves clothes where he took them off? Or shavings in the sink? Or the way he leaves the water jar out of the refrigerator on the cabinet? You know, is there something that is a habit of his that irritates you? Then we're exhorted to forgive 70 times 7. And we're exhorted to accept him and to adapt to him. You accept him like he is. We also accept his position, which God set up in Genesis 3, and he hasn't changed yet. That makes him the final decision maker in our family. Now that means that when we're having a conflict situation and I share with him the way I feel and then he shares the way he feels, that means he has the right to make that final decision. And then that means that I have the right to adapt to that final decision and accept it. Now I don't find that always easy to do. And last year, just about this time, I went through a period of 3 weeks when I literally thought I was going to die. I just couldn't accept the decision that he had made. He made a decision with a particular person in his office, and then they come through the kitchen and they make the announcement that, guess what we're going to do? And they proceed to tell me what we were going to do. Well, it involved 3 weeks of my life that I had already decided what I was going to do and already had my plans made, and I just thought we hadn't had time to discuss it yet. But the decision had been made in front of somebody else, so it made it harder for me to even go and say, I really don't like this. I don't think I can live with this. Because in the eyesight of this guy, Lewis would have looked bad, and I didn't want that to happen. So I was torn between going and sharing with him the way I felt and just talking with God about it. So consequently, I kept talking with God about it. Finally, I had gone through the sovereignty of God verses, you know, Romans 8:28, works everything for good. I had gone through all the verses I knew to go through, and on the inside I was just in knots. So one morning I got up and I said, okay, God, I'm going to start. I was reading on a reading program at that time, and I was in 2 Peter, and I said, okay, God, I'm going to read. I want you to tell me to go and tell Lewis how I feel, because I know he wants my best. And if I shared with him, he would change the decision. Therefore, I'm waiting for you to give me the go-ahead. So I started reading, and I literally felt that God was telling me to shut up. I said, okay, God, I'm not going to go to him, and I'm not going to share with him the way I feel. Not until my attitude is changed. And so as I was reading more, it dawned on me that there was much said in the scriptures about fasting and praying, and I had not done that. And so I started reading all the verses on fasting and praying. And it was easy for me to do it. We had some people living with us, and so I thought, well, I'll just try that. Nothing else I'm doing is working. So I got up that morning, and it was easy to do because I'm always, you know, skipping a meal here and there, trying for weight purposes. And so I started fasting, and nobody knew it because the scriptures were very clear on in secret, and praying as I fasted. So I went out walking that day, and would you believe I started seeing some positive things about that decision? And I said, now, wait a minute, God, I'm not ready to give in yet. I really don't want to change my mind. I want to stick to my guns, and I want him to see how wrong he was. But before I got back home, I really saw some positive things in that decision. And what it taught me, we went ahead with the plans, and we had a fantastic time. And what God showed me was that if I had shared with Lewis, he wouldn't have chosen to do that because he does want my best. Therefore, God's will would not have been done. We saw some very fruitful things come out of that 3 weeks. And then secondly, he taught me about fasting and praying, which I did not know about at the time. And then I realized that you really can find some positive things in the decisions that your husband makes that you don't agree with. It's just that you're not allowing those to go through your mind because you want your way. And then in supporting him in his position, I really encourage you to support him in those decisions in front of the children. That destroys Lewis if the children know I'm not in agreement with his decision. And then the third, another area, which I'll just let you copy those down. Support him in his job. Let him know that you have confidence in his abilities to accomplish that task, because that's where God has him at the moment. And then give him the freedom that he needs time-wise. It's so hard to let go of our husbands and let them have that freedom to spend the time that they need in their particular job. There are all kinds of jobs that our husbands are involved in. Some take night work. Some have to have telephone calls during the night. They have to have their parties interrupted. Whatever it is that your particular set of circumstances are, I really encourage you to let your husbands know that their time belongs to them. And if they think it would be best to meet with someone at a particular time, then you give them that freedom to do that. In Solomon on Sex, he has a particular section on the man's responsibility and job. He talks about how heavy that responsibility is and that it carries with him all day long. I don't feel that. We have 2 children, but I don't feel a heavy responsibility of having income for them. But husbands do. They know that they have to have that support for that family. And we don't carry that burden around, and we cause an extra burden to them if we impose on their time and keep them from having the freedom to spend the time that they need at a particular job. There's a research article came out and said that more men than women wear seatbelts, and they related it to the fact that the man felt that responsibility that if something happened to him, he couldn't work and his family would not be supported. And then just encouraging that you really appreciate the efforts that he puts into his job. You know, that is something that is not easy to do. Men don't want to have to work hard, but they do to support us. And so let him know that you do appreciate that. And then realize the pressures that he feels at work. One day, one of these times when I asked Lewis what was bothering him, he said, "I don't know." And then he started putting out a list. And I saw it was asking this person to pick their family up and move over here. And it was trying to help raise support for this person. And it was all these major things. And I looked and I thought, oh, and I was upset with him because the grass had not been cut. You know, those pressures at work are heavy. And just to realize that. And then in the area of spiritually. There is no one on this earth that is going to pray for your husband like you would. You may ask someone to pray for them, and they will say yes, and they may pray. There are a number of people that we pray for, but there is no one on earth going to pray in detail for your husband to the degree that you could if you would. Philippians 4, 6, and 7 says, "Do not fret or have any anxiety about anything, but in every circumstance and in everything by prayer and petition, definite request, with thanksgiving, continue to make your wants known to God." You know, this has been a fun part of my supporting Lewis, is my prayer list. And there have been times that God has done some really wonderful things just because of asking. And I pray very specifically because that's what the verse says, definite requests with thanksgiving. And I put down things like his health. There are particular things about his body that I need to pray for. In one ear, he has a slight loss of hearing. Well, that's my need to pray. That God would prevent further loss, that he would restore it if he so desires. We should all be praying for the cholesterol level of our husbands and for the condition, circulatory conditions of our husbands. But you know your husband, and there's some physical area that he especially needs prayer for. But think in details. On the job, pray specifically, because when he comes and he shares frustrations from the jobs with you, he's not wanting you to say, "Well, did you do so-and-so?" You have you ever done that? You're thinking, "Well, didn't you do so-and-so? That would have taken care of that." But what he's asking for is just some encouragement. So you can take those kind of things that he shares with you and start praying in detail. His personal walk. Pray for his time alone with God, that God would allow him that time without interruptions, that he will give you creativity so that you will make more time available for him to have personal time with God. In the family, there are particular weaknesses that by studying the temperament traits and personality traits that I've come up with my own two children. So I put those on the list for Lewis because I'm praying that he'll be sensitive and have wisdom to know how to help these two children in these two areas. And then the personal weaknesses. The things that I have found that may be an irritation to me, instead of going back with the constant, you know, "Why don't you do something about this?" attitude, or the fault finding, or the nagging, is to put it on your prayer list. And then pray that God would reveal this particular area to your husband. And then in the area of sex, I pray that God would give us the same sex drive. The only reason I'm sharing these things is to stimulate thinking in your own mind about your own husband. I pray Colossians 1, 9, 10, and 11, which I think is one of the most beautiful prayers that Paul has written or prayed for anyone. It says to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of His will in all spiritual wisdom and knowledge. Isn't that what we want? Our husbands to be filled with spiritual knowledge and wisdom? Colossians 1, 9, 10, 11. So that, and I, when I'm praying to God, I said, so that He will walk in a manner worthy of you, pleasing you in all respects, bearing fruit in every good work, and increasing in the knowledge of God, strengthened with all power according to His glorious might for the attaining of all steadfastness and patience, joyously giving thanks to the Father. Isn't that a beautiful prayer? And then I pray, which is not specifically for Lewis, but I pray for material needs, because by praying for material needs, then I'm helping to relieve part of the burden that he has to carry. This past year, we were under a pretty heavy strain. We were asked to move in the middle of the summer, and which was in July, and we moved August the 29th, which was quite a task. And we had two houses for 6 months. So we were under a pretty heavy strain during the year. And instead of going to Lewis for the particular needs, then I just started praying. And we had company from November the 15th to January the 15th. And so one day I said, well, God, you're going to just have to help us. And so I'm praying for a ham and a turkey. I'm talking about specific. And so 2 days later, one of the guys came up to me and he says, oh, I forgot to tell you. My mom called the other night and said he was mailing you a ham and a turkey. And you should have seen it. It was a smoked ham about like this and a smoked turkey breast about like this. And I just sliced solid meat, all put it in the freezer, and it lasted to January the 15th. Well, by praying for these needs that were genuine needs, I didn't have to keep going to him and saying, what are we going to do? I don't have the money to go and meet these needs. And then in the area of ministry, Amos 3:3, can two walk together except they be agreed? Our husbands have quite a responsibility to love us as Christ loved the church, to be the father of our children, to maintain the order in the home that they should, to keep their daily walk up, to be a success, not giving your life to it, as Lewis was talking about earlier, but to be a success in the business, to bring home the money for support. So they have quite a responsibility. And they also have a responsibility in the realm of disciple making or their ministry. So we can really support our husbands in this area. We can make that home available. We can give them that freedom to spend time with guys, to be involved in the activities that they feel that God is leading them to be involved in, to use their gifts in the church as God is leading. Whatever ministry that your husband is called to do, you should make yourself, the Amos 3:3 concept, you should back him 100%. Or he can't do it. He can't dabble out here and be worried about what's going to happen back here. White Lightning, a movie that was on TV, and I didn't see the entire movie, I just saw a little part of it. A truck driver was fighting a group of truck drivers, and he was standing up for what was right, and his wife started fighting against him. He made a statement to her that he can't fight them and her too. So I think we need to let our husbands know that we are behind them 100% in the ministry, and that we support their time with people. We support their giving of their gifts to people in the ministry. Now, I would just like to close with this concept also. Much of this has been dying to ourselves. And I know part of my battle comes when do I share my feelings with Lewis, and when do I just be quiet? And I found that in some areas that I have done so much damage from doing things wrong, fault-finding and nagging, that I can't come to him and really share in some areas because of all the damage I did in the past. So some areas I can't communicate like maybe you could. So if there are areas that you've done enough damage in that being critical, nagging, picking, then in those areas I would suggest that you take those to God and just pray about them and ask God to give you peace, to settle that in your heart and meet that need in your life because you've already done the damage in that communication with your husband. And then if you feel that maybe the channel is open now, then you try it one more time and just share how you feel. And if nothing changes, let a lot of time go by before you go back on that issue. But if there are areas that you just do not communicate because maybe you're a wife that does not share openly, then you're asking your husband to meet needs he doesn't even know you've got. If you don't communicate to him how you feel and the needs that you have, then he can't meet those needs. So if there are areas that haven't been shared with him, then go to him with the attitude that you just want to share with him how you feel, but you're not criticizing him, you're not attacking him. Does that make sense to you? Are there any questions?
Finances, and you know how children, they'll come to you and they'll say, oh, mommy, I want this, I want that, daddy, I want this, you know, always, always. Mm-hmm. And very, very early in my Christian walk, the Lord really showed me to say this to the children, not knowing, they didn't know, of course, what was in the bank and what wasn't in the bank, but just saying, no, honey, we don't want to spend our money in that way. Whether we have the money or not, you know, because then we are not demeaning our husband's position. We're not saying, oh, daddy doesn't make enough money for you to buy a toy, you know. Just say, no, honey, we don't want to spend our money in that area, you know. And then also, because they'll know that with the Lord, there's unlimited resources. If he wants us to have it, we will have it. You know, and we're not putting a lid on it saying, we don't have the money. You know, so I think it really is a neat, positive approach, you know. So they'll always know to expect and trust and, you know, have faith that the things they need, they'll always get.
That is super. That's what we try to distinguish with Mike and Kim. You know, they come and they want this and they want that. And they say they need. And they've just got to have. And I asked Mike the other day, it was a book. He wanted a book. And I said, Mike, what is the emergency situation here that you're going to die because you don't have that book? You know, you've got to distinguish between a need and a want. And just trying to get them to see that God will meet our needs, but he does not promise to meet our wants. Does anybody have any other ideas on finances? With the children asking for it.
I don't know how we got into it exactly, but the question has come up with our 7-year-old on, does so-and-so have a lot of money? And with one particular couple, they're just a darling couple and good friends, and they moved into a little house that they bought, and she's just got a great knack for decorating, and it looks real cute and quite impressive. And she said, do they have a lot of money? And we've kind of got an answer going with situations like this. No, honey, they don't have a lot of money, but they're rich in a lot of other ways.
Oh, that's good.
And she's developing this concept of rich in other ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was, when you were talking about accepting your husband, too, and not nagging about the little habits and things, I was thinking also how Wade, like, he really appreciates if there's something that I do see that can help him be more, because like he has a habit of chewing ice. And he's been told by an older leader who's over him, you know, that he just, you know, this really bothers him. And so when he does it, sometimes when I remind him and say, you know, did Jerry talk to you about that? And he said, yeah, because he knows that it can bug other people, especially when he's out eating with them, meeting for different things, discipleship and stuff. So he does appreciate, you know, if I do it in the right spirit.
I think if we do it without being nagging, quarrelsome, fault-finding, there is a difference. And also there's a difference just in the where you are at that moment in your communication. If you've just had a conflict and then you say, you're chewing that ice again, you know.
I'd like to share something else, and I don't mean to dominate, but anyway, when you were sharing, nobody will pray for your husband like you will. I really appreciated that, and I just circled it 100 times here on my paper, so I'll remember that. But in our church, John was teaching a Sunday school class, and I was very much into mine, and you know, being very highly rewarded by it spiritually. And John said to me, honey, I really would appreciate if you would quit teaching your class and come in and be in my class, which meant I wouldn't teach, I wouldn't be in the highlight at all. But he wanted me in there for prayer, you know, to sit in the back of the room and pray for him. And so I did that. And I was so highly complimented that he would want me in there to pray for him and support him, you know. And I just thought, that's neat. You know, I'm glad I learned that lesson that he wanted me, you know, it's a neat compliment.
Check out and see where your husband puts prayer backing when you give him this sheet to put in order. Lewis really wants prayer backing. And if he's speaking, if he's meeting man to man, I start praying that God would give him wisdom, discernment. If he's meeting man to man, and when he's on trips, I know he's meeting with people and he's speaking, and I pray for his energy level and so forth. And that makes him feel that I'm right there with him. Because if he knows I'm back there praying, and I imagine that happens more times than just once, having a husband wanting that wife in there, knowing she's sitting there praying. Becky?
One thing that really helps, that supports my husband a lot is anything that he's doing, he wants me to see what he's doing. If he's cutting a board, he wants me to come and say, boy, you did a good job on that board. And that was really hard for me in the beginning because I might be washing dishes or doing anything. And he'd say, come on here and see what I'm doing, you know. And I think I learned early, that really gets a lot of support from him if I can really do what he, you know, come and hold this board and talk to me while I'm holding this, cutting this board.
That happened very early in our relationship. We just started in Bible study, and I made the comment to a Bible study leader, and I said, what am I going to do? Lewis was a principal at that time, and he had an excellent cafeteria. I mean, the manager of the cafeteria was fantastic. She was about this big, but the food was delicious. And he would want me to drop by and have lunch. Well, that's in the middle of the day. And, you know, at that time I had little ones. And I made the comment to her, I said, I just don't want to do that. I don't want to stop what I'm doing and go by there. And she says, oh, I just would love to do that if my husband would ask me to do that. And that taught me early that there are differences within women and the way they think. That might cause me a problem, but might not cause you a problem. But I had to learn to die to myself, and that really was an encouragement to him. And that's why I encourage you to study yourself and study your husband.